If you'd like to listen to our podcasts without ads, please consider becoming a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, enhanced show notes for select shows, and more. For this week only, get 50% off the first year or the first month of membership. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and use code ECLIPSE to receive the discount. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code ECLIPSE. Thank you very much for your support.
Nine, 12, 10, 28, 2, 23.
This is Deep State Radio, coming to you direct from our super secret studio in the third sub-basement of the Ministry of Snark in Washington, D.C., and from other undisclosed locations across America and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the podcast, The Mothership, the big one of all the podcasts we do, the one that started it all, Deep State Radio, with the people that started it all, the great, the one and only Corey Shockey of AEI. How are you doing, Corey Shockey?
I am exceedingly well, David.
That is excellent. And from somewhere in the Wild West, Rosa Brooks of Georgetown University. How are you doing, Rosa?
I'm very good, David.
Yes, because you're as far from the Beltway as you practically could
get.
Right? Exactly. Well, look, let's start where we, you know, naturally, you know, in the interim since the last time we talked, there was, you know, cataclysm. Well, I don't know, but like, you know, fighting in the Middle East of a sort that we had not seen before. Iran launched the first strike from its territory against Israel. It was intercepted thanks to a lot of technology and a bunch of surprising allies, and now Israel is contemplating what it will do to respond to the response. And according to a thing that I read just moments before we came on the air, apparently there was some desire within the Israeli war cabinet to strike on Monday of this week, but they decided better of that. And are going to do it later. But surely they will do it. Let me just go to each of you and get your reactions to all these events, starting with you, Corey.
Yeah, so I too think it's significant that the Iranians visibly struck the territory of Israel from the territory of Iran. That doesn't feel to me like Iran worried about escalation and trying to avoid casualties in Israel. I think the attack was intended to be a mass casualty event in Israel, and thankfully it failed to be so. And the second thing that feels really significant to me, also as you highlighted, David, is how much help Israel got. I was struck that it's already in media coverage that Iran had briefed the governments of the Gulf states, and they promptly turned around and told the U.S. and Israel, which is a nice sign of the cooperation that has grown between Israel and its Arab neighbors in recent years. It was really striking to me that Jordan not only allowed U.S. and Israeli forces in their airspace, but Jordan had jets up participating in the defense of Israel as well.
Including one of the daughters of the king, yes?
That's a beautiful thing. Love seeing this sisterhood contribute to defense of their country and their neighbors. So I think one political consequence of that cooperation, though, is that it will increase Jordan and the Gulf states' influence over Israel's choices in response. Because in particular, you know, Jordan is the Middle Eastern state I'm most worried about as succumbing to the undertow of Iranian influence or malign organization undercutting the government. And they really stepped up. And so I hope the government of Israel will take that into account as it thinks about the kind of retaliation it wants, which takes me to the third thing. I do not think that the government of Israel, the society of Israel, is likely to be content with not retaliating for a visible strike from Iranian territory on the territory of Israel. I think the question is only what kind of response Israel has. And back in the late 1990s, a colleague and I wrote a little monograph on how a nuclear-armed Iran would affect American interests in the Middle East. And one of the people we interviewed said something that has stuck with me all these years. And that was, Israel, at this time, the late 1990s, isn't genuinely concerned about the Iranian nuclear program, because if they were, Iranian scientists would be dying in car crashes. And for at least 20 years now, Iranian scientists have been dying in car crashes, and Iranian generals are no longer safe setting foot outside their territory. And that strikes me as a very useful policy choice should the Iranian should the Israeli government make it, which is to say an attack on Israeli territory will in no way change the, if anything, it will increase the danger to Iran of continuing its network of proxy forces throughout the region and beyond. Sorry for going on so long, David.
No, I mean, that's why we're here, is to hear from you and to hear from Rosa. So what do you have to say, Rosa?
No, I mean, I think Corey's right. I think this is a complicated and scary situation, right? I think that from the perspective of the United States, as well as from the perspective of other states in the Middle East, the worst possible outcome here would be some escalation into open and escalated conflict between Israel and Iran that then sucks in other states. And that's still a scary possibility. I mean, I don't think anybody should go, oh, we don't need to worry about that. This is all sort of contained in some way. But it's clear, as Corey suggests, that a pretty powerful, states were trying to signal several things. And the danger in international relations is always that signals get misread, right? But you know, Jordan, et cetera, and the United States were trying to send a signal to Iran. Do not do this. You know, Israel has friends, and you're not going to be able to do what you want to do, number one, because we're going to intervene. Don't expect us to stand by the sidelines. And that's clearly a message intended to discourage Iranian future escalations by making it very, very clear, you know, you can lob 200 missiles into Israel and they will virtually all be intercepted, you know, and that whatever harm you can do, we can both minimize your ability to do harm inside of Israel, but we can also potentially help Israel in retaliating in a really scary way. And that, you know, obviously is intended to get Iran to back off and realize that it would be very self-destructive to persist. The problem, there are several problems, of course, you know, is that one, that we're, you know, you get into these escalatory cycles. The Iranian missile assault was triggered by Israel's attack on an Iranian consulate that killed two Iranian generals. Now, of course, Israel is saying, well, we have to retaliate against this. And I don't think Israel wants a wider war either. You know, Netanyahu doesn't particularly want a rapid resolution to anything because his political skin depends on his remaining in the prime minister seat, which in turn, unfortunately, probably depends on his ability to prolong the conflict. But he also doesn't want something absolutely catastrophic that weakens his own already quite weak domestic support further. But he could miscalculate, you know, that the planned Israeli retaliation, we don't know what it is. And as Corey said, you know, it may be that they will be cautious and measured and recognize the danger of inadvertently making things even worse. But he's not exactly been known either ever or particularly in the last 6 months or so for his careful, measured responses and proportionate responses, on the contrary. So there's still a real danger that Israel could do something that would escalate this further. I think the U.S. is in a really tricky situation because obviously with Israeli territory and Israeli citizens and lives under attack from Iran, of course the U.S. was going to assist and, you know, trying to protect civilian lives and so forth, and send that message to Iran of back off. But equally, the downside is that in a situation where we've been trying to say to Netanyahu, our support for you is not unlimited, he called our bluff in a sense, which is to say that when push came to shove, of course, we were going to step in and help Israel. That in some ways should remind Netanyahu of his dependence on the United States. But it may, unfortunately, again, you know, signals can be misread. It may also have the opposite effect and further convince him, I can do whatever I want, because the U.S. is just not going to let Israel suffer. And so no matter how mad they are at me, I have total impunity because they will save me from the consequences of my own foolish actions. And clearly he's been, in response to both U.S. pressure and conversations with Britain's Cameron, Netanyahu has been doing his utmost to, you know, put his thumb to his nose and say, I don't care what you think. We just do what we want. So screw you. So I don't think this is a situation that anybody can now take a sigh of relief and say, oh, good, crisis averted. I think it's still at a sort of pretty high level of crisis.
Well, let me ask you a question, Corey. What should the response be?
So can I preface that my answer, David, by saying I think I disagree with Rosa's suggestion that the strike in Damascus was unwarranted.
Well, that's not what I said, though. I said I think it triggered the Iranian response, which is a separate question from whether it was unwarranted or justifiable. But clearly, it was the immediate trigger.
Yeah, and I do think the Biden administration has been signaling very clearly and very publicly that there are limits to our willingness to support Israel's war in Gaza. But I do think the distinction of Iran acting directly is in a different category. And I think actually one of the reasons it was a mistake by Iran to undertake the attack they did was Iran had been the big victor of Hamas's terrorist attack and Israel's response, because Israel was so isolated. I think we're in the same place. Israel was so isolated, and Iran making so direct a move actually flushed out the depth of regional support, not just U.S. support against Iran.
And the response made Iran look impotent, right? To take such a decisive step of attacking Israeli territory and citizens directly and have it be such an utter public failure is both good, right? Because it's obviously good that, you know, thousands of civilians were not killed, but also is part of precisely what makes me worry that it sort of ups the temperature, because now this is a significant loss of face for Iran, raising the temperature still higher.
I think that's right. As my colleagues Hal Brands and Danny Pletka have both emphasized, and this really makes a case for an Iranian nuclear weapons program, because if only 7 of 350 attempts to hit Israeli territory matter, you know, 7's a big number in a nuclear exchange, even if it's a minuscule number in a conventional exchange. And the reminder of just how much better the Israeli military is. I mean, if you look at the picture of the strike on Damascus, the buildings left and right of the Iranian location are untouched. And the building that the Iranian targets were in is absolute rubble. And that's a huge contrast to the strike that Iran posed, which is, again, to say, if I were an Iranian planner, I'd sure see the advantages of a nuclear rather than a conventional capability, which underscores your earlier point, Rosa, about the worry about escalation.
I hope they're not listening to Deep State Radio. Worry, don't tell them.
What I would do if I were the Israelis, my initial response, which I have now had second thoughts about, was that if you fail to deter an attack on your own homeland, especially one so visible from another country's homeland, I don't think you reestablish deterrence by what you had done before, right? You actually have to do something bigger and more significant if you, you know, in classical deterrence theory, to reestablish deterrence, because it has obviously failed given your adversary's choices. And that would have inclined, that did incline me initially to say that I think a response against Iranian territory, my favorite target is the Iranian ship that's in the Red Sea that's feeding intelligence to the Houthi, or Iranian ships that are patrolling, or Iranian coastal military bases that are imperiling passage in the Strait of Hormuz. And I would probably conduct those attacks from Israeli submarines so as to try and draw any Iranian retaliatory strikes away from Iranian Israeli territory. And it also shows off something the Israelis are, once again, better at than the Iranians are. That is, they don't have to use land-based locations for their launches. But I have thought the better of that. And I think a better answer is Israel doing what it looks to me like they are doing, which is shrugging this off as the Iranians just took their best shot and it achieved nothing. Because what that gets Israel is a reminder of their military superiority. Second thing it gets them is appreciation from the U.S., Jordan, and the Gulf states, who, after all, were significant participants in the defense of Israel just now. And the third thing it gets them is the ability to continue focusing on Gaza and on the potential for Lebanese Hezbollah to fold in. Namely, I think the Israeli military pretty well has its hands full at the moment. So upon reflection, I have come to believe they should publicly shrug it off. And the second thing they should do is find an Iranian general somewhere, anywhere outside of Iran and target that person as a reminder to Iran that they just took their best shot and it in no way inhibited Israel's behavior.
Rosa, don't you think Kori should be prime minister of Israel?
Oh, I would vote for Kori as prime minister of Israel in a heartbeat.
I curtsy my thanks, colleagues.
I hope Kori, that you're right to think that that's the direction the Israelis are going in, to a sort of, you know, shrug and go, you know, gee, did you hear something? I didn't even notice anything.
There was supposed to be a big kaboom.
Yeah, but I hope that's right. I mean, obviously, at the moment, Netanyahu is making more bellicose noises, but perhaps they're only noises, because I do think the risk of escalation just remains enormous here.
Well, what would you do?
If I were Netanyahu?
Yeah.
Don't ask me that. That's just too appalling to contemplate.
She would surrender to the state and stand trial.
Correct.
Because
Correct.
She believes in the
Rule
institution
of
democracy.
Right. That's what I would do.
Well, I have to say, I would do it. What Corey has come around to, I think that's the right way to do it. I think, you know, I think returning to the shadow war effectively is a sound path, and they should continue to do the kinds of things that you talked about. But what about what's going to happen then with the nuclear program? I mean, you know, there was all this Donald Trump going, well, this wouldn't have happened while I was president, which was, you know, kind of wrong because it did happen while he was president. I mean, in other words, the Iranians actually attacked us.
Also, they hit Saudi Arabia and the UAE, and Donald Trump did nothing.
Right. And Donald Trump then said, hey, you know that nuclear program you've got? Go, you know, knock yourselves out. And notice that I have not used Rose's acronym that she loves to bandy about here. Because
come on, David, let's hear it.
Okay. All right, JCPOA.
Say it, David.
She loves to call it JCPOA. That's
I feel like I was having substantial success getting other people to pick up JCPOA.
Oh, you were. No, you're the queen of JCPOA. There's no question about that.
So to answer your question, David, I think the Iranians were headed to a nuclear weapons program anyway, and I think this will accelerate that direction substantially, because they have got to be worried that not just with the margin of Israel's military superiority over them, but the apparent tightening of cooperation by a number of countries in the region in support of Israel. So, you know, the Middle East looks lonelier for Iran today than it did on Saturday afternoon. And I think both of those things will accelerate their nuclear program. And the third thing, the U.S. withdrawal from the JCPOA.
No. That's a mouthful. Really, nobody can say that. JCPOA is a lot easier to say.
The Trump administration's withdrawal, as imperfect as the agreement was and as unhelpful as was the Obama administration's shutting off all other restraints on Israel in order to get the nuclear restraint, withdrawing from the JCPOA assisted the advances the Iranians have made, and it collapsed confidence that you can make a deal that will stick with the United States, and it collapsed European willingness to help support the sanctions or to participate in snapback sanctions. So I think we're in objectively a worse place than we were when Rose's JCPOA was effectively being pursued by all parties.
I think it's also clear that JCPOA would have had much more support if it was called JCPOA from the American public, because you need to have things people can say. And the rash decision to stick with an unpronounceable acronym obviously is what sank this with Donald Trump.
Okay, so Rosa, the failure is clearly a Pentagon failure, because of the genius of that institution of coming up with terrific acronyms.
Coming up with an unpronounceable.
Exactly. They should have done a better job for the country than they did by producing some acronyms.
That was classic Pentagon stonewalling and subverting civilian control, clearly.
Right? Like the acronym should have been Strike Tehran or something like that to give it the right heft.
Right. Or Operation Eagle Talon, or, you know, something cool sounding.
So I have a theory, parenthetically, David and Rosa, that the people who name military operations are the same people who name lipstick and fingernail polish colors, because it's essentially the same skill set applied in different domains. And you know how much the military loves cross-domain operations, Rosa.
Absolutely.
It's true. In fact, they're the same people who also name streets and suburban developments.
And cars. And cars, like the Perimeter or the Cayenne.
Or that all-time greatest, the Nova.
Nova, exactly. The Chevy Nova.
Marketed in Spanish-speaking countries.
In the new cross-domain world, you know, the next, you know, Iranian nuclear agreement is going to be called something like Operation MOVE Perimeter, you know, Eagle Hot Pink Talon or something.
Right.
Hot Operation Hot Pink. I like kind of Operation Hot Pink Eagle, really.
Right. Confusion to our
end. A tribute to the Barbie movie.
Exactly.
Yeah, which means Americans of all ages will appreciate
it. You've got it. I really think you're onto something big here, if really also profoundly silly. This is the point in the show where we stop and we say to everybody who's not a member, we wish you could go further because this conversation is a good one. And you could if you were a member, and it doesn't cost much to be a member. So go become a member. Go to the dsrnetwork.com, click membership, and become a member. If you are not a member, however, we've got to say goodbye right now. And if you are a member, then we'll say stand by. We'll be right back.